The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to talk about a college basketball coach looking for divine providence and not finding it, how the gap between saints and sinners may not just be a theological issue, but one that we can actually break down with numbers. And yeah, we're going to have to rant a little bit about last night's inning in Connecticut, but not to worry, for today's play of the day, we've got some aces up our sleeve.
So, Dave, the national title game last night, you and I had a little bit of a disagreement. Turned out you were on the right side, and I was on the wrong side. I give you credit. But first take, what'd you see last night that you want to share with our viewing audience?
As the game progressed last night, we started just thinking about the historical implications of it and what we were seeing. That for all the years that we've been following college football, it starts running through our mind a little bit, what are the best games we ever saw a team play? When you look at who Alabama was up against last night, and then look at that complete domination, not only the scoreboard, but first downs, 21-5. Total offense, 384-92. That's almost impossible against a team as good as LSU. And as we're watching, we're thinking, okay, is LSU playing poorly? No, Alabama was just simply so well prepared, especially that defensive game plan. They didn't allow LSU any breathing room anywhere. So it's always difficult to make these comparisons through the years. But let's say that at least Alabama last night, the top five individual games we've ever seen a team play, we're going to think about those some more in the days ahead, maybe position at number one, number two, but just a dominating performance under pressure when it mattered most, and it certainly moves Nick Saban up into that true, true historical elite level on the college gridirons. Teddy, we know there were a couple of moments in Connecticut that will make you a little bit unhappy, but what else did you bring in with you Tuesday morning?
Well, certainly we have to talk about what happened on yesterday's show, what happened last night. Dave and I on opposite sides of the total in that ballgame. Dave really liked the under. I really liked the over. Dave right, and I'm wrong. Plain and simple. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But one thing you're not going to see us do is trash talk against one another. And here's why. You know, there's a little ribbing and a little poking, no question about that. But there's none of this, you suck, you're an idiot. You know why? Dave won money last night, and I lost money last night.
You didn't read
night.
The postmortem script, did you?
No.
Okay, that's all coming up.
We'll get there. Gotcha. I hear you. But this is a game that gets scored by how much money's in your pocket. It's real simple. There's no need to rub it in. Yeah, I lost. It was no fun watching that game. My clients weren't happy. Dave's clients were. That's enough. You don't need the trash talk. You don't need the, you're an idiot. Dave comes in today like a professional. I come in today like a professional. But the bottom line is, you were right. I was wrong. I give you all the credit. But that's not first take stuff. That's just cleaning up yesterday's mess. First take, we have to talk about what happened. And I'm sure you were watching that riveting national championship game that was so exciting to watch. Yes, I'm being extremely sarcastic. Maybe as exciting as the Florida State-Oklahoma 13-2 game. What was that, back in 99 or 2000? Comparable in terms of entertainment value, which is not very much. You might have missed what happened at the end of the West Virginia game last night in UConn. Now, the play of the days, we're still profitable. From day one of this show, we still have a winning record, and even counting in the juice, you still made a couple of bucks following those play of the days. But, man, we've taken some brutal beats over the last 2 weeks. It's been one after the next. We had the game that Hawaii couldn't get in the inbounds pass, ended up losing by three to Auburn. We had the Georgetown missing the two free throws against Marquette, one for the push, two for the win. He missed them both. We're not going to talk about Baylor. Certainly the Iowa-Oklahoma game stands out. So there's been four or five tough beats over the last 2 weeks alone that have prevented this record from blowing up. And, I mean, last night, just a classic example. At no point for the first 39 minutes and 59 seconds of the game last night was UConn leading by more than 5.5 points. West Virginia was in control of the game. They led by double digits in the second half. They led at halftime. End of the game, down three, 3 seconds left. The perfect amount of time. West Virginia's going to put up a three, and if they hit it, we cover. If they don't hit it, well, the clock's going to run out. But somehow or other, the rebound went just the right way. The shot missed. We saw the UConn guards leak out for a fast break bucket the other way with, one tick on the clock. Lose by seven instead of losing by five. Brutal beat. We've had a handful of them, but the bottom line is, rearview mirror now. Time to move forward. Let's see if we can get a play of the day winner for you guys today. Okay, Dave, let's shift over to Market Watch and talk about the end of the college football season. Let's do a little bit of house cleaning, a little bit of recap, and put the workbooks away. But the SEC now has won 9 national championships in the 14-year history of the BCS Bowls. Let's take a look at the conference records during that span before even more shuffling takes place over the course of the next year. What have we seen so far? The SEC in BCS Bowls, these are straight up, not ATS records, straight up SEC has absolutely been the best conference, 17-8 straight up in BCS Bowls. The Pac-12, surprisingly, second, 11-7 in BCS Bowl games. Much of that has to do with USC's dominance throughout the first decade of the 20th century. Then we have three teams right in the middle, mediocre, Big East 7-7, Big Ten 12-13, Big 12 9-10. And while the Big Ten, they get crushed every year on New Year's Day, it's been the ACC that's been the real bottom feeder in BCS Bowls. How about 2-13 straight up? You've been betting against the ACC. You made a heck of a lot of money since these BCS Bowls have been in place. And, of course, there have been 10 other teams, non-BCS conference schools that have made BCS Bowls. Those teams 5-5 straight up. Again, nothing to write home about. But that's what we've got so far. ACC at the bottom, not the Big Ten, the ACC. The SEC at the top.
Put this on today's show because it's probably the last time we get to run the chart. The landscape changes so much, and we thought, how do we adjust the chart going forward? Do we add Utah's 2-0 to the Pac-12 now? This West Virginia's 3-0 from the Big East, does that carry over to the Big 12? No, we just kind of throw it out because it's a different landscape next year. One that's bittersweet for us. We believe that it's going to be good for our pockets because anytime there are new situations that the markets have to read, it creates opportunity, but you lament how much change there has been. You know, for someone who grew up in Western Pennsylvania, and back in the 60s and 70s, you look forward to Pitt, Penn State, West Virginia, and Pitt, West Virginia. Those three big rivals as they took each other on every year. Well, now, we may never see any of those teams play each other again going forward. So yeah, there's a little sense of loss from a fan standpoint, but from a money standpoint, and that's what we're here for more than anything else, there is going to be opportunity going forward. That particular chart, probably the last time we run it, it won't have relevance because the college football map is changing so much.
Let's answer an email that we got in, and you guys have been great about sending the emails in. We have a ton that we want to get to throughout the course of the week. Here's one from Chris that merits some attention on today's show as we look forward to the NFL weekend. Chris asks, I've been thinking about a decent teaser with the overinflated, overvalued lines for this weekend's NFL action. Tell me what your thoughts are on this. A three-team, 10-point teaser. He likes Denver up to 23.5, Houston up to 17.5, and the New York Giants up to 18.5. My honest thoughts are that there is no way in hell Houston can lose to the lackluster offense of Baltimore by more than 17, and I honestly like the Giants plus 8.5 anyway against Green Bay. And Denver plus 23.5? I'm thinking there's no way they lose by more than 21 at the most. Your thoughts on this? It would be a 5-unit risk for me.
There's a difficulty with this, and here's an easy way to look at it. Take those same games, flip the teaser in the opposite directions, and notice that the sportsbooks, the vigorish, won't change. So you're buying those 10 points at a premium because the 10 points you're buying, the dogs going up, aren't really worth that much. You're getting a lot of dead numbers in your pocket. If you tease them down the other way, especially a game like New England-Denver, look at the key numbers that get opened up on the 10-pointer, the 6, the 7, almost even getting it down to a 3. Same vigorish either way. That tells you something. So tells you that what you're getting isn't worth it. Yeah, it might sound like a nice comfort to have those extra points working for you, but those points aren't worth the vigorish of the teaser. I'll tell you what you might want to do with those five units. Play all three of those dogs anyway, straight up. Not straight up on a money line perspective, but straight up point spread bets. In the long run, that's going to be a better expectation. The vigorish of the teaser just is too much for the points that you're buying in those specific instances. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, we talked on the show, one of the shows late last year, about some of the teaser rules that we have. And the basic thought process is that you want to get as many key numbers, 3, 4, 6, and 7, with any teaser bet as you possibly can when betting the NFL. So you look to tease favorites of more than a touchdown down to under a field goal. 7.5-point chalk down to 1.5-point chalk is a prime example of that. Similarly, you look to tease short underdogs, 2, 2.5, 1.5 points. You tease them up over a touchdown. That's the way you maximize your value with teaser bets. That's the way that the professional bettors use them. They're not looking to tease big dogs and make them even bigger. And in the playoffs, really, teasers are not a part of my strategy at all. In the regular season, yes, but the postseason is different. And when you see a team that's beat in the postseason, guess what? They're beat. Did LSU give good effort in the fourth quarter last night? No. Did Cincinnati give good effort in the fourth quarter against Houston? No, they were beat. Did the Atlanta Falcons give good effort in the fourth quarter against the Giants? No, they were beat. And we saw last week 3 of the 4 games be decided by more than 10 points against the spread. And that's not unusual for postseason football. The extra 10 points wouldn't have done you any good with Pittsburgh or Cincy or Atlanta. So 3 out of 4, useless. And it's not unusual in the playoffs where you're going to see blowouts, you know, where the teams just don't have it. So again, when you're talking about blowouts, I wouldn't be shocked if one of these three teams just gets annihilated and does not put forth the effort in the fourth quarter to cash your ticket. So the answer is no, I would not make that bet. Stay tuned. We'll give you more recommendations before this week is through.
So here's what we'll do on tomorrow's show. Last week we talked about the historical patterns of the wildcard playoff games. Tomorrow we'll do the same thing for the divisional playoff round. That'll give you a little better idea of the percentage of times these games do break wide open. Some good food for thought before we get into the games themselves in Money Time on Thursday and Friday.
Please keep those emails coming, getting great questions every day. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And, of course, there's absolutely no reason that you're not getting involved in the community. Lots of you are. All of you should be involved. Active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/posting forum.
Is good comedy timeless? We believe it is. One of us doesn't, but one of us also had the over last night. Postmortem time coming up. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because David from you should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you the things you should be seeing, but probably aren't.
Some days they just don't pay me enough to do this. Like, you should see this script. But I'm reading. If you've been watching Providence play in the Big East so far, doesn't it seem like they're a little bit outnumbered on the court? They've lost to St. John's, Georgetown, Syracuse, and Seton Hall by a combined 56 points, averaging less than 60 points per game in the process. So naturally, if we're going to do a take on Providence basketball, I'm stuck with the fact that their nickname is the Friars, and there's absolutely no way to get through this without a Malinsky reference to the Friars Club. This isn't going to happen. The damn club's 107 years old, and is about as relevant to the modern comedy scene as Providence is going to be relevant in the Big East this year. But it's what I'm stuck with. So before breaking down what's wrong with the Providence Friars, let me fulfill my obligations. How about a joke of the day from the Friars website? This is a great one. You guys are going to love this. Partners help each other undress before sex. However, after sex, they always dress on their own. Moral of the story, in life, no one helps you once you get screwed. Thanks, Dave.
It wasn't so bad now, was it? Okay, some of this stuff's a little bit corny, but you know what? If you've been around for over 100 years and you got to post the joke every day, that's going to happen. Talk about Ed Cooley at Providence a little bit, though, because it's no laughing matter for Cooley this year. In fact, if you think about one of the great old lines from Groucho Marx, maybe this is the one that would be appropriate for Cooley, that classic, I would never want to be part of any club that would have someone like me for a member. Cooley's got a lonely club this year. He can be a good fit at Providence over time. He's from Providence. He was a two-time Rhode Island High School Player of the Year back when he was growing up. But what did he inherit this year? A bare cupboard. We talked about Seton Hall senior leadership in the Big East, about West Virginia senior leadership. Cooley has no seniors. Awfully hard in that conference to build when you don't have that sort of leadership, that maturity, and that mental toughness. The reason we're bringing this up is so many times when teams go bad early, the markets begin to adjust and think, okay, we're going to look for these play-on spots when the line stretches out too far. Providence may be a different story. This team may get worse instead of better. The reason is there just are not enough members in this Friars Club. So look at the minutes played by some young guys, the key cogs of their rotation in these first four Big East games. A sophomore Bryce Cotton, out of 160 possible minutes, played 155. Junior Vincent Council, 153. Sophomore Gerald Coleman, 149. Freshman LaDonte Hinton, 146. Those are very high minute counts for this early in the season. And the problem is they're difficult minutes to play because you're losing. You're in against superior opponents, bigger, tougher, older, more mature. We see some real issues there that this Providence team could wear down badly over the next couple of months. This may be one club where the odds makers are going to have a difficult time ever getting the numbers high enough. The New Orleans Saints are road favorites at San Francisco this week. When Teddy read the openers yesterday for the playoff round, we noted how awkward that setting is. It's only come up one time in 28 years. The only time we've had a road favorite in those 28 years at this round of the playoffs, Dallas went to Carolina, lost the game outright. Shows you how unusual this is. Well, the Saints have looked that good in the marketplace. You could make a case that maybe their home season has been historically one of the best ever played in professional sports. But is there too much weight being given there? Note that the Saints have only played two road playoff games in the Drew Brees era. Take a look at how bad they were. Last year, a 9.5-point favorite at Seattle, they lost outright 41-36. Go back to 2006. Chicago is a 2.5-point favorite over the Saints. The Bears win the game 39-14. The only two road games, road playoff games of the Drew Brees era, Saints lose to the spread by 37 points. That begs the question, as we move towards this week's kickoff, is there too much weight being given to those Saints' home performances?
Let's look at the hard numbers here, because the Saints may have just played the single best home season in the history of the NFL. 9-0 straight up, 9-0 against the spread. They beat the number by a total of 132.5 points in those games. So more than two touchdowns per game better than market projections. On the road, however, this is the Saints team went 4-3-1 straight up. We're going to count the overtime win in Atlanta as a push for our records. We do not look at overtime results. We just look at what happened in the 60 minutes. 4-3-1 straight up, and 4-4 against the spread. They lost to the spread overall over the course of the year by 20 points. Only two of the eight road games they played were against winning opponents. They had outright losses to the Rams and the Bucks. They struggled to beat the non-playoff Titan team by five. They beat the Panthers by only three. 5.8 yards per rush at home, 11 rushing touchdowns on the road. 3.9 yards per rush, only five rushing touchdowns. You look at Drew Brees and his passing numbers. At home, 122.4, just sick. On the road, 100.7, still good, but not as good. Touchdown interception ratio 29-6 at home, fell to 17-8 on the road. Again, still good, but not as good. Then we look at the defense, and the defense allowed 196 points in those eight road games, and half of those road games came against bottom-tier teams with bottom-tier quarterbacks. Look, they played the Rams in St. Louis with A.J. Feely behind center. They played Jacksonville with Blaine Gabbert behind center, the fourth game of his career. They played Tennessee with mostly Jake Locker, Matt Hasselbeck injured after throwing only seven passes, and they played Minnesota with Christian Ponder. So rookie quarterbacks, weak quarterbacks, and still the Saints' defense gashed repeatedly in their road tilt. So the question we have to ask ourselves, are the Saints' home performances carrying too much weight? Is that why this point spread is where it is? Plenty to think about as the week progresses.
When we come back, the focus shifts to a lot of tonight's action. The Insider Six-Pack with the news you need to know. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, guys, let's pop the top on today's Insider Six-Pack. Let's start in the NFL, where the elation coming out of Denver has kind of subsided a little bit. Eric Decker only has a sprained MCL, not a tear, but while John Fox has issued a day-to-day on Decker, when asked about his status yesterday, our sources tell us Eric Decker not likely to suit up for Denver this weekend. Now, Decker led the Broncos with 44 catches during the regular season. He had 13.9 yards per catch. He had a punt return touchdown. He had eight receiving TDs. They went on to beat Pittsburgh with only three wide receivers on the roster, Demaryius Thomas, Eddie Royal, and Matt Willis. So don't be surprised if Decker is officially replaced this week and either DeAndre Goodwin or Greg Orton to get activated from the practice squad to give the Broncos a little bit of extra depth at wide receiver in New England this weekend.
Books were noticeably slow to put up Houston Charlotte tonight in the NBA. Game now up, settling out of Houston, a three-point favorite. Let's clear up those issues for you. Kevin Martin for Houston sat out the last couple of days of practice with the flu. He'll be in tonight. Also, it looks like Kyle Lowry will be back. He missed the last couple of games for the Rockets. Ugly back-to-back losses to Oklahoma City. Lowry back in the practice court yesterday. He'll be back in the starting lineup tonight. Courtney Lee, though, that right calf injury, figures to keep him out. Lowry kind of the key guy and the guy who might have a breakout season for them, largely because of the team that the Rockets are. Lowry hits the boards pretty well for a point guard. But when you play for Houston, there are a lot of rebounds available to go get. That front court does not hit the boards well. Houston only number 23 in the league in rebounding so far. Getting Martin and Lowry back really matters against what could be a tired Charlotte team tonight. Charlotte wrapping up a 4-5 and a 6-8 stretch that Houston Energy might give them an edge.
The first game back after a long road trip has been a very negative situation in the NBA over the years, especially when there's only one day of turnaround time. And that's the spot the Milwaukee Bucks find themselves in tonight. They took an 0-5 collar on their West Coast swing, and now returning home with limited time to prepare, they are likely to get a key member of their rotation back in the lineup. That's starting center and former number one draft choice, Andrew Bogut, a guy who I met once at the Caesars Poker Room when he was out with a back injury. Bogut's been back in Australia for the last 4 days dealing with a personal situation. So he's expected back in Milwaukee. The question is he going to be fresh? Is he going to be jet-lagged? Is he going to be conditioned properly? Those are legitimate concerns for Bogut tonight. And the Bucks have more issues than just Bogut. Of course, they did lose the five games in a row on the West Coast swing, and they're probably going to be without Mike Dunleavy, Bino Udrih, and Luke Richard Mbah-a-Mute on the floor this evening. Three key guys in Scott Skiles' rotation, even with the return of Bogut.
Some big things to watch when Oklahoma City and Memphis play tonight in terms of going forward. Let's call this one new faces in key places. Oklahoma City's lost Eric Maynor for the remainder of the season. that's actually a big loss. You know, when you lose your number two point guard, guy who can exert some good defensive pressure. But right now, they may not make a roster move. Reggie Jackson, rookie, really impressed Scott Brooks in the limited training camp that they have. They like his tenacity. They like his work ethic. Finally got a chance to play major minutes against San Antonio on Sunday. Played them pretty well. 11 points, 4 assists in 23-19 of court time. We're going to watch him real carefully, as they will be, to see if they have to go out and get a veteran to play the backup point guard for a team that thinks they can get the top seed in the Western Conference. That really matters. Plenty to watch for Memphis tonight. Can Maurice Spites get his career rejuvenated? He fell completely out of favor with Doug Collins in Philadelphia. Collins did not like his work ethic, basically let him go for peanuts. Spites has a lot of physical talent. Question is, will he bring it every night? Will he fit as a team player? The one thing Zach Randolph absolutely did for Memphis, and we've already seen how badly the Grizzlies have fared without Randolph, not only losing him, but losing Darrell Arthur, who would have been Randolph's replacement. Spates against the Lakers on Sunday showed that natural ability. 17 points, 7 rebounds. Tonight we're going to watch and see, though, can he fit with Memphis from a chemistry standpoint? A team that's dead last in the NBA in three-point shooting really does need an interior offensive presence.
It was good news, bad news, and no news for the Miami Heat yesterday as they took the practice floor at the University of San Francisco. Full contact practice for Eric Spoelstra's squad. The good news, getting Mike Miller and Eddie Curry on the court together for the first time this season. The two guys who have the potential to be key role players for Miami over the course of the long campaign. The bad news, the point guard, Mario Chalmers, unable to practice because of his shoulder injury. And the no news was no news about Dwayne Wade, and who, you know, no news at all from Wade. And we talked about this a little bit before. When teams are dealing with their superstar players throughout this NBA season, they're likely to err on the side of caution. A regular season game doesn't mean a whole lot to a team like Miami. Having Wade healthy and avoiding any type of re-aggravation of his injury takes precedence over playing against the Golden State Warriors. So right now, doesn't look like Wade is ready to play back-to-back games. The Heat have a much bigger test tomorrow against the LA Clippers at the Staples Center. Don't be shocked if Wade sits tonight and plays tomorrow. On the Golden State side of the equation, Warriors are going to come in shorthanded again. No Stephon Curry this evening, and it doesn't look like they're going to have Andre Biedrins down low either. So two key cogs for Mark Jackson's Warriors also not likely to suit up.
Some of the key under-the-radar injuries in college basketball aren't necessarily guys that are out, but guys that are playing hurt to the point where it really impacts their performances. I've got to talk about Jake Odom at Indiana State. Sycamore's off to a disappointing 1-3 opening in Missouri Valley play, and a lot of it can be attributed to their floor leader. He's playing with plantar fasciitis, which is awfully painful to have to play through, but choosing to gut it out and play through it, and instead of taking the rest of the season off, he's already passed the redshirt point. So this full year of eligibility has already been used up. Only shooting 20.8% from three-point range this year. Last year, it was 32.1. Through those first four conference games, he has a negative assist-to-turnover ratio. Last year, it was almost 2-1 the other way, 139 assists versus only 75 turnovers. Got a good quote from the trainer, Brad Yergin, who tells us a little bit about what he's having to go through. He says, when asked about rest, he said, that hasn't been an option for him. We're letting him go as tolerated. He's been 75% all year. Resting him one game won't make a difference. He needs a significant amount of rest. Be sure to factor that in. This is a kid who's been awfully good in his career, but he can't be the same player the way he's playing right now.
When we come back, it's time to shift to the hardwoods. Vegas Sports Day ready for Money Time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys. time to raise the roof. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to the Rose Garden in Portland, where tonight the Trailblazers -5.5 in a little revenge matchup against the LA Clippers. Portland's first loss of the season came at LA. It was a game in which they played very poorly for three quarters, down by 20-plus going into the fourth. They made a nice rally of it. They ended up scoring 36 points in that fourth quarter. Still came up short on the scoreboard, and a late jump ball lost by Portland had them losing against the spread as well in that contest. And Gerald Wallace, who was shut out, held scoreless in that game, a guy who the Blazers 6-0 when Wallace scores 10 points or more so far this season. He was pretty furious with that performance, put a lot of emphasis on tonight's game. Hey, we need some payback. Dave, is he going to get it?
Well, we use the phrase DNR a lot in college basketball and pro basketball the next couple months, defense and rebounding. Boy, is this a mismatch. You know, for two teams that think like they're competing or act like they're competing for the same spot near the top of the Western Conference standings, look at these numbers. On defense, Portland number 5, the Clippers number 21. Rebounding, Portland number 6, the Clippers number 30. Dead last. We had some questions early in the year about, you know, this Billups-Paul backcourt, thinking, okay, two natural point guards, can they defend well together? Is there a size issue too? Is that simply too small of a backcourt from a rebounding standpoint? For all the upside the Clippers want to believe they have, if you're sitting at number 30 in the NBA in rebounding, there's only so far up the ladder you're going to be able to get.
Yeah, in fact, so far the Clips have won the rebounding battle in exactly zero games this year. They did tie one team, but they've lost the battle in every other contest. Worth noting for the Clips, their last road game, their only road game that they've only played two road games all year and none so far in 2012. Last time they went on the highway against a team with a winning record, they didn't just get beat. They got annihilated. They were rested in that ballgame, had two full days off prior to the contest. They went to San Antonio, lost by 25. It was a non-competitive effort. Also worth noting that the Blazers so far this year at the Rose Garden, 100% straight up. And they did have a push or even a half-point loss, depending on where you got the number. But I'm going to grade it as 100% ATS. They have absolutely played well in Portland in front of the home fans.
Let's go to Champaign, Illinois. This will be the nightcap on the front of the ESPN cameras tonight. A lot of money to the host, Illini, now down to Ohio State, an 8.5-point favorite. We can kind of understand where the money's coming from because historically this line looks a little bit high. Illinois program has been much more competitive than what we expect to see over the next 2 months, and that's the key is what we expect to see. We think the markets are a little bit slow on realizing how far Illinois has fallen. 13-4 overall. Doesn't mean a whole lot, had a weak non-conference schedule. But look at this opening 3-1 in Big Ten play and how close it was to being at 0-4. Had to go to double overtime to beat a mediocre Minnesota team. Could only win by 1 point at Northwestern. And boy, you want to talk about ugly. That 59-54 slog over Nebraska on Saturday, not an inspiring performance by Illinois at all. The last couple of games played without Sam Maniscalco, their point guard, so the offense has really lacked direction. But what made the Nebraska loss even worse, DJ Richardson, a guy who needs to step up with Maniscalco out. He's playing with a sprained right wrist. He only scored 2 points in 21 minutes that day. Markets might be reading old Illinois, not current Illinois.
Yeah, certainly this doesn't look like one of Bruce Weber's better teams with the Illini. And as the injuries continue to mount for Illinois, that could really be a concern moving forward. From the Ohio State side of the equation, man, I mean, the Buckeyes got that wake-up call against Indiana, a game that they're certainly going to remember. And then since that, almost flawless, each of the last two ball games, blowing out Nebraska, annihilating a red-hot Iowa team, an Iowa team that came in with some confidence, and Ohio State said, no, we're going to, it was not close. And, of course, with the ESPN cameras on hand for tonight, may give the Buckeyes that added extra juice for this type of venue because they've had pretty good success against the Illini in years past. But, you know, when you have a team that's clicking, doesn't hurt to have a little bit of extra juice or something behind them if they're going to give their best effort in this instance. And let's not forget, I mean, the Ohio State, you know, they're number three in the country in turnover margin. We talked about the defense. We talked about the rebounding. How's Illinois going to score in this ballgame? No Maniscalco. We have Richardson banged up. I don't see Sullinger getting beaten in the paint. I think it's going to be real tough for Illinois. I'm sure that they're going to look to slow down the pace in this ballgame and play it. This is, you know, the type of game where the losing team may struggle to score 40. I expect that losing team to be Illinois.
It's one of these spots where we like to look to a favorite that's going to get out and extend their legs a little bit. Those last two Ohio State wins, they were so clean and so easy that they played under wraps a little bit. So a couple of factors here. One, when you look at this line, I think, well, historically, this is high for these programs. Two common opponents in Big Ten play so far. Ohio State wins that comparison by 58 points. That's 29 points per game. Second is the ability of Illinois to play from behind. Now, Ohio State just extends such good defensive pressure. They're so fundamentally sound. I don't know where those Illinois points come from. This number actually looks short. This should have been low double figures. We'll have some Ohio State in our pockets.
Let's go to Manhattan, Kansas right now, where the Wildcats minus 2.5. We're even seeing some threes pop up right now on my live odds screen. Over the undefeated Baylor Bears. Now, Kansas State coming off ending one unbeaten run. They knocked off Missouri, previously unbeaten Missouri, this past Saturday. And they did it in blowout fashion right from the get-go. K-State took control of that game and ended up winning by an easy double-digit margin. Now, the only meeting last year, Kansas State with a straight-up win. They were minus 6 in that ballgame. They won by 8, and they won the Battle of the Boards by 10, 33-23. But we're talking about two absolutely stellar defensive basketball teams. Baylor allowing just 36% shooting for the season. Kansas State allowing just 37% shooting for the season. And you don't get layups against these teams. You don't get interior points between them. 179 blocked shots. Points going to be tough to come by here, right, Dave?
Going to be very tough. It's going to be one of these games that's ugly to watch, but could be good for the pocket. So we might be looking at a total a little bit, but let's give you one of our strategies on totals. You'll notice over the course of the year that we play very few competitively priced games under, because there's always that fear of the late scramble points. You get 10 or 12 points in the final minute of a close game. Baylor will certainly scramble it up. When you're undefeated and you're looking to protect that record, you go all out at the end. A Frank Martin team will always scramble it up at the end because they compete so hard. So what do you do with a spot like this? You look to the first half under, where you will not have that scramble in the final minute at all. One of the great things about first half unders is so many times you only get two shots taken in that final minute. You get down to 35 seconds and the team's got the ball. They hold for one. 35 seconds in the second half, you have the ball up and down the court 9 or 10 times. So maybe a little bit of a first half under here. Because here's the difficulty we see in terms of scoring. Yeah, Baylor's got five guys that average double figures. Kansas State has three guys that average double figures. But there's not a dominant scorer in the bunch. Not one of those eight players averages more than 13.2 points per game. So when you step way up in class against a fierce defense, you have to have a go-to guy. If not, you get a lot of slow possessions. Both of these teams also get a lot of garbage points off the offensive boards. Not going to be available tonight. The defensive glass gets clean pretty good. So we're going to look at, you know, maybe a little first half under, but no surprise if it's just a fierce game played all the way through.
But first half under, that's not where we're going to go with our play of the day for Tuesday. No, we're going to go to a team we talked about earlier in the Insider Six-Pack and a team that we were looking to fade. That team, of course, the Indiana State Sycamores, which means we'll be taking Evansville plus 7.5, up to 8 now in most locations. Purple Aces plus the 8 at Indiana State. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Tuesday. And that's going to wrap it up for today's edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back again mañana.